thanks for coming out, and thanks for joining me. And if you have a chumash, feel free to open it up to Parshas Balak and Sefer Bamidbar. We're going to get there in a second. I wanted to start off by, I guess, addressing a question in general. There is a major machlokas, really many, many people, but I'll start with the Maritz Chias versus perhaps from Shamshin Falhirsch. And I assume this is probably what these achronim mean. The Maritz Chias probably, in his Hakdama to Gemara, Perek Yud Zayin, echoes a Yerushalmi, echoes a Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah, that essentially all Agada comes from Har Sinai. I guess, while Rav Shamshin Falhirsch disagrees, he has a letter on Agada, page 865. He has a letter on Agada that echoes a different perspective, which is Chazal, the rabbis of the Talmud, the rabbis of the Gemara, of the Mishnah, used to give a drush every Shabbos. And essentially what Agada is a compilation, a likud, a collection of different drushes that different rabbis would give throughout our history. And that's a major, major machlokas in general to the historical nature of Haggadah, which probably reflects a fundamental question, which is how much are we obliged to stick with Haggadah? If it comes from Har Sinai, most likely we'd be incredibly obligated to take it very seriously. In other words, you wouldn't disagree, you wouldn't say, okay, it's machlokas, the Radak and the Abarbanel and the Evin Ezra, who are like reading Pshat, versus, let's say, the Maamar Chazal, which is a Medrash, or at least you'd be hesitant to do so. But the truth is, regardless, and it is a major machlokas, regardless as to whether or not it came from Har Sinai, l'chora, there are numerous examples as to where the Pshat, the text itself, seems to be completely different from how Chazal read it. I would imagine sometimes the gap is so great that there has become skeptical, cynical people who almost are dismissive of Chazal, so to speak. You know, where they get, oh, classic Chazal, make everyone black or make everyone white or make this kind of comment, who knows. But if you look at the Pshat carefully, you kind of don't get that impression. So I guess my question is, a lot of those people make very good observations. I think the cynicism's, perhaps disrespectful. But certainly, there are numerous examples. But if you read this story at least a preliminary first, read, without a casual read, without really looking at it carefully, the numerous times where you get the impression Chazal just, I don't know, where the heck did they come up with most of this stuff from? Now, certainly, if it's from Har Sinai, you'd at least want there to be some type of correlation and not gap between Higa, and not gap between what you find in Chazal and what you find in the text. In other words, and if Rav Hirsch is right, then Chazal just were making drushes, he'd also want there to be some type of gap, maybe even more so, because if the rabbis got up in Darshan, it means everything they're saying they saw from the text. And I guess my question is a twofold question. If they actually got some of these ideas from the text itself, well, how the heck can you find them? Can you? Where do you see them? Is there any allusion to it at all? Number one. And even if they didn't, find these ideas, even if these theories are not rooted in the text, nonetheless, you'd like to believe that at least they're not complete at odds with the text. If Chazal have any meaning and value to them, and we certainly believe that they do, one would imagine that, if there are Torah-oriented sources, you'd imagine it's not completely at odds with the text. You wouldn't want to say it's Machlokas Chazal versus the Pshat. And therefore, I'd like to wonder, can you actually find hints to a lot of Chazal's seemingly out of place and wild statements from the text? And I'd like to suggest that the answer is yes, and I'll deal with you one specific example today. Although, in truth, there are numerous, numerous examples, dozens, probably. One of them would probably be maybe the most obvious, one of the most pronounced, maybe where you see the gap the clearest, would probably be the Bilam story. A preliminary or a casual read of the text, one can clearly conclude that Bilam was a righteous individual with prophetic powers. After all, he was a Navi. That should imply some type of spiritual success. More than that, he demonstrates an unshakable commitment to what Hashem wants. 8 times he reiterates that he will not destroy, he will not curse, he will not deviate from Hashem's plan, from Hashem's word. It's in Bamidbar Perek Chav Beis Pasuk Ches Yud Gimel Yud Ches Lamed Ches Perek Chav Gimel Yud A Beis Chav Vav Perek Chav Dalid Yud Beis and Yud Gimel. If you want, I'll give you those afterwards again. But the basic point is, Bilam seems to reiterate time and time again, I will not deviate from Hashem. I will only do what Hashem allows for. If Hashem lets me go, I'll go. If Hashem doesn't, I won't. The man is extremely, extremely strict in his observation, in his observance, pardon me. And therefore, one may wonder why Chazal categorically reject that perspective of Bilam. He's not innocent. He's not objective. He's not obedient. He's not righteous or even parv. Chazal call him Rasha Gamur. That's the Medrash Tanchuma Parshas Balak. You know, Yud. They interpret almost every one of his actions negatively. There's nothing positive. Let me share with you just a few examples of what Chazal say. Bilam had an ayin, ra'a, a ruach, a gavoa, a nefesh, rechava, arrogant, with an evil eye, etc. Bilam was k'shem shem smechem l'kalas Yisrael kachu sameach. Even though he says, I will curse, I won't curse, depends on Hashem. Bilam is excited just like the people of Moab to curse Hashem. And more than that, take a look for a moment in Perek Yud Beis, sorry, Chaf Beis, pardon me, Pasuk Yud. Let's just take a look for a moment. Go back up to Pasuk Tes even, just to look at the context for a moment. Vayavo Elokim El Bilam, Hashem comes to Bilam. Vayomer, Mi Anashim Ha'eleimach, who are these people with you? Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Bilam El Elokim. Bilam says back to God, Balak ben Sipor Melech Moav Shalach Elai. Balak, the king, the son of Tzipor, the king of Moav, he sent for me. Without any further analysis, do you think that is a positive response on Bilam's behalf, a negative response, or parb? Is it respectful, disrespectful, or neutral? Any suggestions? Yeah?
I mean, obviously Hashem knows who's with him.
Okay. That's a question on why Hashem may have asked. That's a fair question. I'm not wondering why Hashem asked. It's where, meaning God clearly knows. It's not the only time in Chumash, numerous times God interacts with people as if he doesn't know, which I assume it's just because, you know, that's how we need to be interacted with. But there is a point to that. I want to focus on a different point for 1 second. How does Bilam respond? Respectfully, disrespectfully, or parv?
No, it just could mean that, like, he's really asking why are you with them? Like how he...
Okay.
He should have known that.
And what should Bilam have said? I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I feel you're being colored by Chazal. And I'm open to that. That's a firm thing to do, and I respect it. But at least from the most basic pshat, one could have imagined, and I'm going to try my best to defend that position. Don't get me wrong. You're not going to walk away here, you know. What I'd like to do in this year is, there are 2 more parts. I mean, there's a lot more subparts. But what I'd like to do is prove to you that Chazal seemed to take everything. Chazal had a quote-unquote agenda. And their agenda was to darken, to blacken, to make Bilam look absolutely wicked. And then what I'm going to try to do afterwards is, after I'm done showing you just how much they quote-unquote misread the text, I want to go back and show you how everything they said was unbelievably insightful. And they just had a beautiful perspective on an ability, a keen insight into this particular text. So that's, at least at first glance, one could have read this pasuk as neutral. Who are you with? I'm with this guy. Yet if you look at Chazal, and Rashi, for example, quotes it, Afal pish'enata mechabdeni v'enata motzi li shem tov ba'olam ha'malach mevakshem osi. Says Bilam, here's what Bilam means. Hashem, even though you don't really give me much respect, you know I'm not that great, but the people, the kings in this world, they really respect me. You see that, God? They give me coven. That certainly is a much more negative presentation of what Bilam intended than what the Chumash at first glance says. Am I wrong? I think the Mefarshim point out, maybe the Sif Secham or somebody, the Gurariyeh, they point out, look, it says Balak Melech Ben Sipor Melech Moav. Why do you have to say Melech Moav? It must be he's indicating that, wow, I really care what the kings say about me, and kings here respect me, God. Perhaps, but like you could have read that a lot more parv, a lot less incriminating. You hear that? Let's take a look at another example. Take a look in Pasuk, let's say, I guess, Kaf. God comes to a night. If they come to, you know, they come to call you, you can go with them. You can go with them, but don't deviate from my plan. Stick with what I say. And Chazal, Rashi quoting says, "V'afal pichein v'yelech Bilam amar shema efatenu v'yitratze." Maybe I can convince Hashem and he'll agree. Maybe, but like that wasn't. You didn't have to read the pasuk that way. And perhaps even more so, Chazal. Take a look, and perhaps this is the clearest example. Take a look in pasuk Lamid Dalid is where we're going to focus in upon. But let's just go back to pasuk Lamid Gimel for a moment. After the angels in the path three times. Says the angel to Bilam, I was in the path. That's why your donkey stopped. Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Vayomer Bilam El Hamalach. Bilam then says to the angel, pardon me. Vayomer Bilam El Malach Hashem. People with me? Chav Beis Lamed Dalet. You got it? Vayomer Bilam El Malach Hashem. Chatasi. I've sinned. I didn't know that what? You were standing in the way, vata, and now imrabe necha ashuvali. If this is bad in your eyes, I'll go back. You just tell me to turn around and I'll do it immediately. Chatasi, I've sinned. I didn't know you were there. I'm innocent. Let me know and I'll turn away from my plan right now. You tell me to go back, boom, I'm going back tomorrow. Whatever it is you want from me, angel of Hashem, who represents Dvar Hashem and Ratzon Hashem, let me know.
Is it really possible that Bilam didn't know that what he was doing was bad?
Well, we'll get to that point in 1 second, but he certainly is willing to turn back, no?
Yeah, but what he says is, I didn't know, I didn't see you there. As in, I mean, it could be that literally I didn't see you, or it could be I didn't understand what your derech, which is not to curse the name. Like.
Either way, listen to how Chazal read the pasuk. Say Chazal, Neged Hamakom Hi Tshuva Hashem. He spoke specifically. This response was against Hashem. Amar Lo, Hu Baatzmo, Tzivani Lalechet. Hu Baatzmo Tzivani Lalechet. He himself commanded me to go. Vata Malach Mivatel as Dvarav. Limud Hu Bekach Shomer Davar Umalach Machzir. Look what happens. You know, you sent me to go, and now you're bringing me back. Hashem changes his mind, and if that's not incriminating enough, look at the other line the Chazal say, Shaya Rasha Gamor. Said Chazal, you know what Bilam said the word chatasi? He wasn't sincere. This wasn't genuine. It was totally insincere, completely disingenuous. You want to know why he said chatasi? Because he knows it's the magic trick to say. If you say chatasi, the angels can't get you. It's like a get out of jail free card. And that's why he said chatasi. Because angels, once you say chatasi, they can't stop you. Okay, perhaps, but again, you certainly get the impression this pasuk could have been read with a much more neutral, perhaps, parv, maybe even positive, to be honest with you, lenses. So far, so good? Raise your hand if you do not understand my question. You don't understand
it. What's the positive of this pasuk?
God, I'm really sorry. Send me back and I'll go back. Whatever you want.
It's unfathomable to imagine that he didn't know what he was doing. It seems crazy. Well, Balak sends, you know, people to him to say...
I'm apologizing.
Yeah.
He's saying chatas. He's saying I'm wrong. He's saying I'm sorry. Beyond that, Hashem let him go. Hashem, I'm not going to go unless you let me go. Hashem says no. He tells the people no. They come back and say, could you go? He goes, I can ask again. He asks again. Hashem says, you can go. He goes. An angel's in the way. And the angel says to him, you know, well, I'm sorry. He says to the angel, listen, I didn't know you were here. Let me go back and I'll know. I could see why you'd want to defend Chazal, and I'm going to get there. But you can at least see how someone could have read this pasuk positively, no? No.
I'm not so concerned with defending Chazal. I'm more concerned with what I think is going through his mind, which is hard to tell, but what the pasuk seems to...
meaning, you know, if you know, I guess I'm the exact opposite. I'm very much concerned with defending Chazal, and you know, very much doubt that a person would say, Chatasi, I'm sorry, I'm wrong, I feel bad, let me do something else. You tell me what in the world you want me to do, and I'll do it. That's an incredibly strong statement. He could have just said, I'm sorry, now move out of my way. His point is, you tell me to go back, I'll jump ship, I'll abandon mission. Anything in the world you want from me, I'm willing to do, just tell me. The angel's like, whatever you want, you can continue if you want. How do you blame the guy? All right, I at least think one could have said such a claim like that. If I got 99% of the shear or 90, you know, I thought that was the pashup shot. And the pashup, at least a preliminary reading, I read it that way for numerous years, and I was always struggling. On the one hand, you have the pashup shot. On the other hand, you have some type of tradition. And probably Chazal had a tradition. And the answer is they may have. But again, I like the tradition not to be at odds with the pashup shot. Okay. What I'd like to do now is share with you three different perspectives. What's your name, by the way?
Daniel.
What?
Daniel.
How you doing? We met once, right?
Yeah.
Nice to reacquaint. Sorry. In any event, what I'd like to suggest is that perhaps a deeper look at the text with a little more careful perspective, you can really begin to see a totally different perspective of Bilam, and I'd like to share that with you. And I want to base my defense of Chazal / new perspective, depending on what interests you more. Once upon a time, that was funny. In any event, on three different arguments. I'd like to show you three different arguments. Argument number one, and this is, you know, not going to... before I get to that, just out of curiosity, raise your hand if you, this particular example bothered you in the past. Raise your hand if you noticed the gap between, you know, an opening, non-careful, you know, casual read versus Chazal. One, two, three, a handful. Some people weren't bothered by it. Okay, I was very much bothered by it, but let's try my best to... okay, let's give it a shot. Okay, I'm going to try my best to give you two clear proofs and one just to minimize the sting, minimize the problem. So I'll start with that one. I'll start by minimizing the problem. Anytime, anyone, I'll say it this way, every single example of Chumash where Bilam projects or is seen positive, neutral, sincere, genuine, etc., etc., it's always projected by himself. In other words, he says, Hashem, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. It's seen through his perspective, through his glasses. If you wanted to know what other people in Chumash thought about him, it'd be a really interesting thing. Sometimes, the Chumash itself tells you, this guy's good, this guy's bad, this guy's neutral. Sometimes it doesn't. Bilam, the Torah never passes judgment on at all. And that creates some of the unclarity. The Torah never says this guy's a Rasha. Chazal certainly say that. And the Mefarshim, following suit, certainly do. But the Torah itself never says. And therefore, I guess it's a little bit open to interpretation. Sometimes, right? Where's the great example? There's no way you could argue Moshe wasn't a tzaddik, or at least he wasn't humble. The Torah is crystal clear. Anav ma'od mikol adam. You know, it's just a beferish pasuk. Sometimes the Navi's very clear. Shmuel, no one has prophecy, no one's good enough for prophecy, and Shmuel is. You just get the impression, it's a different story, you cannot. Bilam, no one says that about him. He himself tells you he's great. Now, he might be great, but how does Balak look at Bilam, for example? It's almost like they're not talking to each other. Balak sends for Bilam. Bilam says, I can't go. He's like, okay, I'll give you more covet. Bilam's like, I don't need covet. I need permission of God. Balak's like, okay, I'll give you a lot more covet. Bilam's like, I don't need a lot more covet. I just need God's permission. He asks God, finally comes. Why didn't you come earlier? I told you I'd give you covet. Bilam says, I told you a lot of times. I don't need covet. I need God's permission. Okay, fine. Let's just move forward. And if you curse the Jews, I'll give you covet and money. And Bilam's like, okay. I don't know how many times must I tell you, I don't care about the covenant and the money. It's not what it's about. It's about listening to God. And Balak's like, how many times must I tell you, I'll give you the stinking covenant you want. It's almost like they're not talking to each other. And numerous times are they not talking to each other. And perhaps there actually is two different perspectives. Bilaam saw himself one way. Balak saw Bilaam completely differently. Now, if this is correct, and I think that is correct, at least you should realize that Bilaam, when he's projected positively, it's himself projecting that image to the world. Nowhere does anyone else in the Chumash see him that way. It's just he himself sees himself that way. And therefore, at least 50-50. Who's right, Bilaam or Balak? 50-50. And maybe even 49-6-51, because who did you expect to be more correct or honest about Bilaam's character? Bilaam himself, who's a little bit biased? Or Balak, who seems like a totally objective person? A third party. At least 50-50, maybe even 51-49. But that's argument number one, which is, and I think it's an important thing to say, the Torah never tells you Bilaam is honest or genuine. He just tells you he sees himself and he presents himself that way. That's point number one. Point number two, I'm going to get to next, and then point number three I think is the most fun. Okay, point number two. Point number two. Yeah.
Does the Torah like say that explicitly about Yaakov? Like, I mean, I know they say about that Noach was a tzaddik, but like, does it say like explicitly about Yaakov?
There's no pasuk I know of that says Yaakov's a tzaddik.
Right. This is it. Or I mean, it's, I guess with the tradition that we can like know.
Or Avraham or Yitzchak.
Right.
There's no pasuk that says it. I guess if one would question something as great as that, the answer would probably be even beyond tradition. From the Chumash itself, the fact that Avraham seems to be selected, Hashem makes a bris with him, Hashem makes a bris with Yitzchak and with Yaakov, those are probably reflective of something very positive. Certainly later on, you know, you find in Tehillim and in, you know, Moshe, I'm the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's why Hashem introduces himself to Moshe. You would imagine if God identifies with these people, you know, you would think that's at least some stamp of approval. But you're right, you definitely see it clearer from Chazal. But it'd be very, very difficult to read Chumash and think Hashem doesn't approve of these people. You know, it'd be difficult to believe you didn't walk in with that agenda beforehand. Not you, but anyone. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. Number two. Okay. And this is something that, Daniel, I think you were trying to say before. I'm just going to try to develop it a little bit. And I guess although Bilaam was granted permission to go curse the Jews, let's just take a look at a few things. Number one, what's he interested in doing? Cursing people. Right away, that should be a little bit of a red flag. More than that, what's his career? He's like a spiritual hitman. You know, you give him a dollar and a quarter and he curses someone. Doesn't seem like the most righteous, pious, you know, career one could have. You know, it's not doctor, lawyer, like us Jews, you know. The spiritual hitman is certainly somewhat incriminating. Darkening. Beyond that, if he does really know things and can interact with Hashem as well as he thinks he can, it's somewhat surprising that he has no idea that Hashem's interest and has an agenda over here of taking Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and trying his best to build a nation. In other words, this seems to be completely antithetical to everything Hashem is trying to do. And if he is so insightful and does know what's going on and is aware of history / ideology of history, the Hashkafa of history, well, one might have expected a little more. And even beyond that, take a look, for example, in Pasuk, let's say, Chaf Beis. Even earlier, let's go to Chaf Aleph. Let's go back to Chaf for one moment. This is the Pasuk we just read was Chaf. I'll let you go, just don't misbehave, don't deviate from my plan, really. Vayokam Bilaam Baboker, Bilaam gets up, Vayachavosh et Atono, Vayelechim Sarei Moav. He goes, Vayicharaf Hashem. God gets angry. Why? Everyone has all sorts of drushes. I never understood why they had drushes. The Pasuk tells you, Ki Holechu. Why does God get angry? Because he went. That's the most surprising thing. Can I go? Yes. Here I go. What'd you go for? Hashem actually got angry because he went. How do you understand that? That's why people try to figure out, well, he must have Vayakam, he got up early in the morning, like Avram Vayashkim and Boker. Maybe he had all sorts of agendas, who knows what. I'd like to suggest that perhaps Bilaam never once deviated from the word of Hashem. He was a very obedient individual. What he didn't care about was Hashem's larger picture. Perhaps Bilaam did everything like he was supposed to. He just didn't care about anything more. He never violates Hashem's word once. No one's critical of him of doing Averos. It's just that apparently avoiding bad is insufficient. If that's correct, let me show it to you just a little bit more. For example, the angel says to him, "Hinei anochi yatzasi l'stan ki arat haderech l'negdi. Behold, I came to obstruct you, because your way is contrary to me." That's what he says in Pasuk Lamed Beis. It's crystal clear. Bilaam knows this is not what Hashem wants. That's why Bilaam says, "Tell me to turn back and I will." Because he's hesitant. He knows he might not. He knows this is not... Let's start from the beginning of the story. Can I go? Hashem says no. He asks again, can I go? Hashem's like, fine. But you got to listen to exactly what I say. Does that sound like a warm invitation to go? Or does it sound like, I'm letting you go, but I'm not that excited? Of course the latter. I'm letting you go. I'm just not that excited. Hashem lets Bilaam do it. Hashem lets Bilaam take every step along the way. Hashem, so to speak, is testing him. Let's see, are you interested in Ratzon Hashem? Are you interested in doing what's right? Do you care about what I want from this world? Or are you just sticking with the bare letter of the law? And time and time and time again, Bilaam just continues to ignore everything that Hashem wants and just sticks with everything that Hashem says. If you look, Bilaam encounters the angel three times. The first time, there's a lot of space, so he steers off to the side. The second time, it's much, 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 much less space. There's a much more narrow thoroughfare. So he kind of steers off, and the donkey catches his leg on the wall. And the third time, there's so little space that there's actually no room at all to veer to the side of the donkey. It's such a narrow path. What visual impression do you have? A lot of space, less space, no space, that's like a dead end. I think what Hashem is subtly telling Bilaam is, don't go there. Here's a dead end. Don't do it. Stop. Turn back. Take a different direction. If this is correct, why doesn't Bilaam do it? The answer is, well, Bilaam's half blind. He sees the world, but doesn't see the depth of it. And that's what Chazal say. Chazal actually claimed that Bilaam was blind in one eye. What's the idea of being blind in one eye? It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. What do you mean blind in one eye? I don't know if it's literal or not, maybe, but the point is that when you're blind in one eye, it means A, you see, but not really well. You can see, but you also can't see. One eye you can, one eye you can't. Bilaam saw all the facts, but he didn't see what he was supposed to see. And maybe even more so, when you see with one eye, not the other eye, it means you see, but without depth. All the pictures are there, but there's no perspective. And that's exactly what Chazal are pinning to Bilaam. Then he saw correct. Bilaam suma ba'achas me'enav haya. Physically he could see, but only partially. Bilaam was a Navi with the highest prophetic ability, yet he missed something of considerable size. Although he had incredible potential to see prophetically and understand Hashem's will and Hashem's values, his half-blinded vision only ultimately led him to see what he wanted to. And he missed the spiritual depth. For a person who has such profound understanding of the world, he missed an incredible amount of it. And the answer is because he wasn't looking with his depth. He closed one of his eyes. If that's correct, maybe even this you see from other areas. If you look, and I don't want to spend too much time in it now, but elsewhere in Chumash, you find other proofs to Bilaam's wickedness. He beats the donkey angrily, with a lot of anger. More than that, he changes from the Lashon of, you know, Ara, he said, instead of the word Ara, Orer, to like Arur, to curse, he says Kavav, it's a different word, which the Malbim and others point out is much more strong, much more severe. And if you look elsewhere in Chumash, Moshe twice, and it's crystal clear, Moshe twice tells you, once is in Bamidbar Lamed Aleph, once is in Devarim Chaf Gimel, that Bilaam is no good, Bilaam is bad, Bilaam is not the good guy, Bilaam tried to send us these girls, the Midianim, to sleep with the Klal Yisrael, etc., etc. And therefore, if you look through Bilaam's perspective, maybe 50-50, but if you look carefully at the text, now there parts of Chumash, you definitely get the impression he's wicked. That all having been said, I'll take around the questions and share with you what I think is the coolest support to what Chazal are saying. Good. Yeah.
So then what would you say is God's intention when he says, I mean, I know it's sort of going in opposite direction what I said before.
That's okay.
What is, I mean, to me, my understanding of Pshat is his intention was completely off, which is, I think, what you were putting forth.
No, I think so. Like, I'm not sure, it's not just intention, meaning, it's almost like if he would have had a better intention, still going to curse it. His actions are off, but he's just not disobeying. When Hashem says, if they come to call, Bilam says, if they come to call me, can I go? Hashem's like, yeah, if they come to call you, you can go. There's no tzivoy, there's no mitzvah. Bilam's like, can I go? And God's like, yes. You think the word come is too strong of a word?
But I'm not sure what God means, because it seems from the two psukim, come and kabbalah, back to back, it's like God says, go, and he says, no.
No, God says, if you really want to go, I'm letting you go. And then when he goes, God's disappointed. A lot of times, let's say you have a teacher who says, I'm a baseball coach. So I coach my son's soft baseball team and I coach my daughter's baseball team. Now, my son, we happened to win a championship this past year. There was one kid on the team who got to me a little bit. Well, good kid, sweet kid, but like a little bit missed the cues. He's like, we sat down like just before the championship game. We had just won the first playoffs. We went to the next game. We're like, okay, guys, I want to give you guys a little bit of a speech. We're going to sit here for 2 minutes. Some guy goes, 2 minutes? I'm like, if you don't think it's important enough to be part of this team to listen to this 2-minute speech, you can go home. He goes, really? I said, yeah. But I really think you should stay. He's like, I'll see you later. Like, totally missed all the cues. Now, it's not the exact same thing. And that kid really, like, just way off with the cues. I'm saying, like 2 minutes. Like, but the point was, like, anyone who doesn't think they're mature enough to be part of this group can leave. You don't really mean leave. You're giving them permission, but you don't really want them to leave. Maybe one step shy of that, but that's really what's going on over here. Hashem's like, don't go. Bilam's like, can I please go? So you say, okay, if you really want to go, go, but make sure you don't deviate from me. That's what I think. In any event, if this is correct... What's your name?
Malki.
Hey.
So, you were saying that, according to one theory, that maybe he does things right, but just doesn't see the bigger picture. I mean, if his career is cursing people, then how could Hashem have approved of all the other times that he's done that?
I'm not sure how many times Hashem did approve or did not approve. In other words, there must have been enough times where Hashem did not approve that he's cautious and never actually commits to be able to do it because, he knows Hashem may have said no in the past. I guess the question is, why does Hashem give Bilam such power? Is really your question, right? It's an excellent question. Hold on to that for a second. I'll try my best to think about it if I don't get to it in my own chat. But it's a great question. What I'd like to suggest is that there's an incredible amount of similarities, parallels, from this particular story to a previous story in Chumash. The story of the Akedah. Let's start off with some of them. Number one, both protagonists set out on a journey which is a destructive agenda designed and intended to destroy Klal Yisrael's future. Bilam's going to curse them. Hashem's going to kill Son Yitzchak. They both arise in the morning. They both wake up early. And if you even look at the Lashon of Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayakam Bilam Baboker, even sounds a little bit like, as you mentioned earlier on, Vayashkim Avram Baboker. And more than that, after Avram wakes up, Vayashkim Avram Baboker, Vayachavoshet Chamorah. What's this? Vayachavoshet Atonah. He also wakes up in the morning, saddles a donkey, and it's interesting. Take along, who does Bilam take along with him? If you look in Pasuk Chaf Beis, who does he take along with him? At the end of what? Shnei Na'arav Imo. That's awfully similar to the Avraham story. Wakes up in the morning, saddles a donkey, heads out with two Na'arim to destroy Klal Yisrael. Beyond that, none of the Na'arim are named. We don't know who they are. They both go anonymously. More than that, they were both interrupted by an angel. Avraham doesn't accomplish his task. An angel tries to stop him. Comes out of Shamayim. Bilam as well has an angel who's trying to stop him. Think of how many times in a Chumash a man's in the middle of a mission and an angel tries to stop him. I can think of two. Maybe there are others. I don't know. But it's not a common phenomenon. Next, they each climb up a mountain in order to accomplish the mission. Avram ascends to the top of the mountain with Yitzchak as a carbon. Bilam goes up to look down to people in order to curse them. Both Avram and Bilam's plans were foiled at the last moment, and Klal Yisrael were saved. More than that, they both build a Mizbeach. Avram builds a Mizbeach in order to sacrifice his son. Bilam builds a Mizbeach in order to curse Klal Yisrael, both of them set out to damage somebody, the exact same person whose damage ironically turns around and he's blessed. More than that, Avram stands with a knife. Bilam's angel has a sword, v'charbo shlufa biyado, and you find similar language, v'yisa Bilam esenav, sounds very similar to v'yisa Avram esenav, and in truth, Chazal highlight a lot of this. Chazal say all sorts of interesting things. One of the things may be, you know how Avram knew to leave behind Yishmael and Eliezer? Because Avram said, look over there. Who sees that? And Yitzchak's like, oh my goodness, I see angels. And Yishmael and Eliezer don't. And Avram says, well, if you can't see, stay with the donkey who doesn't see. Shvulachem po machamor. Well, stay with the donkey who doesn't see. That sounds at least very similar in my mind. Beyond that, there's all sorts of similarities. And the question becomes, what's the point? And I'd like to suggest it was not unintentional. Those 10 similarities, linguistic, conceptual, were intended. And the question becomes, why would any author do that? Particularly Hashem. I think there's too many similarities that it was just not noticed, that the editor missed it. You know what I'm saying? Kivayachal, whatever, you know. Only for the question, what's the point? But before I share with you, perhaps, let me list for you a lot of the differences. Not just the similarities, but the differences. Because there's a lot of really interesting differences. And when I say differences, they're not just like, well, here's a light and here's a tie. Those are two random things. But light and dark are the exact opposite. And therefore, if I would say light and tie, you'd probably think they're two random things. If I would say light and dark, you'd probably think I'm referring to two contrasting things. Make sense? Okay, here goes. Number one, Avram has no idea what his final destination is, but is fully aware of the intended result of his mission, killing Yitzchak. Bilam knows exactly where he's going, but he has no idea what the result of his final mission will be. Exact opposite. The angel is successful in stopping Avram from his task, but by Bilam, the angel is unsuccessful. Avram leaves behind the two Na'arim along the way. Bilam takes the Na'arim all the way till the end. Avram has a chamur, a male donkey. Bilam has a aton, a female donkey. In the narrative of the Akedah story, it's Avraham, the protagonist, who's holding the knife, where in Bilam's story, it's the Bilam episode, it's the angel, the opposite person, holding the knife. Avraham immediately recognizes the angel, while Bilam does not. And to highlight that, Bilam misses the angel. The Torah tells us the donkey sees it, and Bilam doesn't. Avraham, the protagonist, gets an unexpected blessing, while Bilam does not. In perfect contrast, he blesses somebody he does not want to. Avraham receives a blessing and causes his favorite person, his son, to be blessed, while Bilam does not. Avraham's angel interrupts him, and Bilam's angel interrupts him, but Bilam from the ground, Bilam's angel standing on the ground, while Avraham's angel comes from Shamayim. And if you're not yet convinced, then perhaps the clearest contrast is that Avraham leaves behind a donkey to interact with an angel, and Bilam leaves behind an angel to interact with a donkey. And I'd like to suggest that's just too picture perfect to be by chance. And therefore the question is, well, why? What's going on? And perhaps the Chumash's message is that Bilam is the opposite of Avraham. Avraham sacrifices everything he cares about, puts behind everything in an unparalleled way in the Akedah story. Everything that Avraham cares about, everything he built towards, everything he wanted, chesed, love, his child after many years, he doesn't even tell his wife, the future of everything he was looking to do was supposed to be funneled through Yitzchak. And Avram says, Hashem, whatever you want, I'll put aside my own desires and do what you want. Perhaps Avram and Bilam are the exact opposite. Bilam prioritizes his own desires over Hashem's. And the best way to capture the exact opposite is to take the best story in all of Chumash, where a person puts beside everything that they care about and just follows Hashem. And if this is correct, you know Avraham's name is Avraham, coming from Av Hamon Goyim. He's a person who, because he was so dedicated to Hashem and to Hashem's mission, he's seen as the Av Hamon Goyim. Bilam is seen as Bil'am, a man who has no nation at all. Perhaps Avraham and Bilam are like perfect people to foil off each other. Avraham was all about building Hashem's world in a selfless way. Avraham, everything he has, he's willing to give away. And the best story that captures that is the Akedas Yitzchak. Bilam, he's totally disinterested in what Hashem wants from this world. Selfish individual. And that captures who he is. Hashem gave two people incredible power. One built Klal Yisrael and changed the world. One sat around cursing people, trying to make a buck and a quarter per curse. And perhaps if this is correct, you see this numerous places in Chazal. Chazal reiterated many times, it's a famous mission in Pirkei Avos. If you want to be like the Talmidim of Avraham, do this. But the Talmidim of Bilam, the exact opposite. And there are many midrashim which highlight also the contrast from Avraham to Bilam. Let me show you the mission in Pirkei Avos. Kol mi sheyesh biyado shlosh dvarim halalu, mi talmidav shel Avraham avinu. V'shlosh dvarim acherim, mi talmidav shel Bilam harasha. Ayin tova ruach nemucha v'nefesh feila, mi talmidav shel Avraham avinu. Ayin ra ruach gavav v'nefesh rechav, mi talmidav shel Bilam harasha. What's the point? The answer is Bilam perhaps had the potential of Avraham, but came up short. Avraham was given something and Bilam was giving something, but Avraham was so interested in passing it on. He built a nation and built a world. Bilam, sadly, was a waste of not just a waste of potential. Bilam was a selfish individual looking to slip by the skin of his teeth and ultimately see a few important Musar Haskels, so to speak, the religious take-home message. Number one, from Bilam, and this is a little bit scary, Hashem wants more than just a Sur Meira. Hashem wants an Aseh Tov. Hashem wants more than just avoiding Averos and coming up Parv. Didn't do anything wrong. That's not good enough. Not doing anything wrong is not what Hashem wants from this world. Hashem wants from this world is you to be like Avram, not like Bilam. Hashem wants you to step it up. Hashem wants you to make a contribution. The reason why Avraham has the name Avraham on Goyim is because the whole world saw him that way. He was a father to Yishmael, and a father to Lot, and a father to Yitzchak, and a father to the people of Stone who he didn't know, and his father to the Esenefesher Subacharon. Avraham was a father to everyone. Avraham loved Hashem's world and wanted to improve it. It's not just good enough to put checks in all the mitzvot boxes and none of the averos boxes. Hashem wants more from us. And the million-dollar question is what? And the answer to that is each person different. Beyond that. Beyond not recognizing or even valuing potential. Beyond not aspiring to impact. You see an incredible, unwavering and unparalleled dedication to Ratzon Hashem from Avraham. No one says it's easy, but it's important to know where the goal should be. There are numerous people in world history who came up short of Avraham's level of dedication. That having been said, never ever lower your goals. Have unrealistic goals if you want. Just have realistic assessment, realistic expectations. The goal of a goal is to motivate you. The goal of assessment is to see how you've done in a realistic way. If you've accomplished your goal and it was too low, you shouldn't be that proud. And if you haven't accomplished your goal because it was unfathomable that you could actually get there, but you did a good job, pat yourself on the back. There's a good chance none of us are going to have that commitment that Avraham Avinu had. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. I don't know exactly how much it was. I know it was a lot. I don't know you guys. I don't even know myself. But certainly to dream about what Hashem wants in this world above and beyond checks and X's. Avodas Hashem is not just what you don't do, and for that matter, it's not just what you do. It's what you're looking to build. It's what the world could be. It's what you give above and beyond the call of duty. And I'll conclude with a fascinating Dvar Torah I heard from Rav Lichtenstein once. The Gemara says in Meseches, I don't remember where it is anymore, Brachos, maybe Megillah, I think. I remember. that if a person has yisurim, it's my brachos, if a person has yisurim, punishment, things are bad and they're coming, be mefash fesh v'masiv, look into your actions. And if you're mefash fesh v'masiv, if you look into your actions, you don't find anything, says the Gemara, be tali and bitul Torah. So if you look and yes, listen, it's not so clear, bitul Torah is even in Aveira. There's a big machlok, is how much Torah you have to learn today. There's different shittas in the Gemara, in the Ramah, the Grah, many shittas out there. And he suggests that perhaps bitul Torah doesn't mean every second you're not learning, means the bitul of the potential in Torah you had. And Avodas Hashem is more than just what you do. It's about achieving potential. It's about aspiring for religious greatness, not setting for religious mediocrity. It's about wondering what Hashem wants from you in the world and not wondering how to get by with a bunch of checks and boxes doing what you want. We're the children of Avraham Avinu. We shy away from Bilam. We value aspiring for religious excellence. Thank you very much.
Thank you.